So thank you all for coming. This is the orientation for the UApply 2.0 system for those of you who are using UApply 1.0. I know there's a lot of department representatives today here, as well as a lot of representatives from our project team and from IT services. So thank you all for coming today. I just want to say before I get started that I know it's a busy time of year. I know you've all been on vacations. This session is being recorded, so if you have any colleagues who weren't able to attend any of our sessions, please feel free to let them know. This will be available online shortly. Thank you all again for coming, and thank you for supporting this project and coming to all of our presentations over the last few years and getting to know the product, and I hope you like what you're going to see today. So in today's orientation, we'll be introducing the 2.0 version of UApply, which will show you some new features that are being introduced, some of the changes from UApply 1.0 that you're using now, and changes to the high-level process for graduate admissions in general. So the ways that the entire process is going to be changing for everyone across the board. After we look at UApply 2.0, we'll be looking at the training plan. There is a comprehensive training plan that's going to be available to all users of the system to be trained and to be sure everyone knows what they're doing. The go-live plan, so when everyone will be starting to use the system. And last will be the go-live support for the community. We're putting into place a mechanism to support the users of the system, so academic and administrative in the system, because of our experience with 1.0, where we know that there was support that was lacking within the system. So there will be a support process in place to support all of the users of the system. So, the new features. In this section, I have a couple of PowerPoint slides that I'll be showing you, but in addition to the PowerPoint slides, I'll actually be going into the system and showing you some of the live system as it is right now. We'll be using the development environment of the system, which is currently actively being tested by our testers. So I apologize in advance if there's a few bugs that may pop up here and there. So far, I've only had one in all five presentations I've done. So hopefully we'll continue the trend today. So I'll start off. For the applicant, things are going to be changing for everyone in the system. I'm going to be starting with our applicant pool because they are the clients of the university. They're the ones who are going to be coming here. They're the ones who are paying their money to apply to the university and hoping to get admitted. They will be getting a totally new application experience. So what they're using now will no longer be used for graduate studies following the winter 2014 term. Once that is closed, it is closed for good. So the current application form will be retired. The way they track their application through Minerva will no longer be available for graduate students following the winter 2014 term. They will get a brand new simplified application form. What this means is that we have taken the old application form. We did focus groups with new, recently admitted students when we started this project. And we took the application form and we cut it down to its minimums, to what they need in order to submit an application to the system. So they will get a very simplified, very easy to use, very user-friendly application form. The new application tracking dashboard. This is replacing Minerva for applicants. The applicants will no longer be logging into Minerva at all. They will be completely outside of Minerva until such point where they accept the offer of admission, at which point they will have to go into Minerva to complete their registration and to continue on their student life cycle here at McGill. But until they accept that offer of admission, applicants will be entirely held within the UApply system. They will not have to go anywhere else. It's a one-stop shop for applicants. The ability to communicate directly with the university within the system. This will allow applicants, when they apply, after they've submitted an application, to communicate with the department or departments that they have applied to. This will be, I'll show you how this works in a few minutes, but essentially what will happen is that they will communicate type messages right into the system that will be sent to the departments, and the departments can then respond in system, and all the communications will be saved as part of the applicant's file without having to do any additional indexing or scanning or batch jobs or anything like that. It all gets saved as part of the applicant's file. Improved automated communications to help guide applicants through the process. What I mean by this is that when we did the focus groups with the applicants, one of their biggest complaints was that they did not have enough communication from the university about their application status. So what we're doing is we're sending a lot of automated communications to the applicants when things change in the system about their file, when a decision is made, when a checklist item is added to their required documentation, when they submit an application. A lot of communication is going out to the applicant to keep them informed about what is happening on their application. And lastly is something that's applicable for music only right now, but it is a big thing for us, is the ability to upload media files. It's something we've never been able to do before as a university. And now we can accept audio and video files in our system, which music will be using to gather the auditions from their applicants for certain programs. So I'm going to go into the system. Okay. So this is the development environment of UApply 2.0. This is the brand new login screen that's been created for the system. Everything behind the login screen has changed too, but this is what everyone can see. So when an applicant goes into the system, or even a staff member goes into the system, they will all use the same entry point, the same login screen. For applicants, they will come in and they will have two options. Either creating a new account, which is here, if they are brand new to McGill, or if they are a former student from years gone by where they do not have a @mail.mcgill.ca alumni email for life. If they do have one of those email addresses, they can use it to log directly into the system. And in doing so, it will gather their information that we already have about them and pre-populate a lot of the application form right as soon as they log in. So it'll pick up all their bio-demo information, their education history that we have on file. Everything that we have about them will be preloaded into the system because we're polling against the Banner system where we have all their data. So in this case, I'm going to log in as an applicant who is already created. He's my favorite Mr. Peanut. Go. And something I just forgot to mention on that first page that is something that's also new to the university as a whole is when an applicant logs into the system, they will have the ability to use the forgot username and forgot password functionality. It's something we've never had here before, and there's a lot of human interaction that is needed to reset this kind of information. Now the applicants can do it themselves without anybody getting involved. So this is a lot of work that's done now. Students have to wait to get their password reset. Now they can do it in the system. They get an email, reset the password, and they can log in right away. And they can do it in any time zone. They don't have to wait until we're open. So this is the brand new applicant dashboard in the system. I've logged in as an applicant who has already been here before. He's already got some draft applications here. You can see here at the bottom. And he is able to start new applications. If I was entering the system as a brand new person who just logged into the system, one of the first steps, or the first step, that I would have to do always is to complete my profile. All applicants, even if they're McGill applicants, are directed to go in here and verify their profile or even complete their profile before they start submitting an application. They'll actually be blocked from starting a new application until this is done. The reason for this is because we use a lot of the information we gather in the profile to generate the rest of the system. So in this case, the profile is built of identification information, contact information, additional information, and educational history. That is the basis. That's biodemo information. So name, first name, last name, birthday, gender, address, phone number, all that fun stuff. And then lastly is the educational history section. In the education history section, we ask them about their previous history before coming here to McGill. And in that, we have redesigned this page from the way it looks now, for those of you who have previously used the app form, to be a little bit more intuitive than it was before. Whereas we now have an institution search box, which is also hooked directly up to our brand new cleaned institution table in Banner. We've spent the last 3 years cleaning up the institution table in Banner to make it easier to use, easier to find things, and to add more pertinent information that can be used inside the application process. So in this case, I'm going to look for something, let's say I'll look for bishops. So I put Bish, which is a really bad idea because there's a lot of universities that have Bish in it. So I'll just keep going. O gets a little smaller. P gets a little smaller. S. There we go. Bishop's University in Lenoxville. So in previous times, the applicants used to have to pick their institution from a list of universities where the university name was truncated to 30 characters because of Banner limitations. We've gotten past these limitations, and we've been able to put in really long names in multiple languages within the system. For example, if I type in a really good one with long names, Pontifical. There are lots of universities out there that have the pontiff involved. You can see them all here. A lot of them are in Vatican City. Some of them are in Brazil, like this one, for example. Pontifica Universidad Católica Argentina Santa Maria de los Buenos Aires. You can't even see the Aires because it goes off the screen. That would never have fit in Banner in the old days. It would have been truncated to 30 characters, and no applicant in their right mind would have been able to find that university properly. So we've changed this a bit to make it a lot easier to find and a lot easier on the back office to manage the school table. So once an applicant is finished with their profile, you can see that there are green check marks. It means all the mandatory information is done and they can go right ahead. Once they get all the green check marks, they'll get the button here that says they can start a new application. And on their home page as well, they'll get the button that we saw earlier that says new application. They click the new application, they're sent right here to the curriculum selection page. This is as far as I'm going to go in this section. I'll come back to this in a second after I've done the next slide. But essentially what we're asking the students here is to identify what type of student they are or what they want to be here at the university. Pay attention only to the first three items on the list because the last one shouldn't be there at the moment. There's something in the system that's overriding this right now. But we ask them by default whether they want to be a degree student, a non-degree student, or an exchange student. So we set them off into different tracks, and each track can be handled differently, which is something that we weren't able to do before. It was a one-size-fits-all kind of system where everyone went in the same door. So I'm going to go back to the presentation and move on to the next section. So I'm moving on to the department side of things because we've made the applicant side of things very easy, very intuitive, and there really isn't a whole heck of a lot of stuff for them to do. They apply, they track their application, and they either say yes if they were admitted and they want to come, or no, they don't want to come if they weren't admitted, or they've been refused, in which case they won't come back into our system anyways. So I'm going to move on to the departments. And a lot of things are changing for the departments, on the department side of things. There will be a new administrative control section that will be available for departments for the application process. It will allow the following. They'll be able to create questions and document requirements that can be asked of the applicants in the system. What this means is that anyone who has access to the system, be it enrollment services, graduate and postdoctoral studies, departments, they will be able to go into the system and request that new requirements be made in the system. Questions, documents, if there's a test score they may want to ask for that we can maybe accommodate one day, that kind of thing. They can go in there and they can create these requirements in the system. The requirements go through an approval process. They're not available right away. Enrollment Services still has to approve all the requirements that go into the system. But once they are approved, they get put into a giant requirements catalog that is there to be used by anyone who has access to the system. And in this requirements catalog, we'll have everything. And no matter what department creates it, whether it be central administration or one of the departments or one of the units, it will be available for anyone to use if that question is relevant to what they want to be asking of their applicants. Control of application deadlines. This has changed from the way it was before. For the last few years, we've been using something called dates for guaranteed consideration in the system. Essentially, what this means is the application is open all the time for everyone. And if the applicant should happen to go into the system and it's past one of our posted dates for guaranteed consideration, the department has no real reason to consider them for admission. However, this system did not work very well, because if an applicant pays their $102.60, as it will be coming soon, they feel obligated to review their application, even if they have come into the system after the date for guaranteed consideration. This is being undone, and we're putting it back to deadline dates. Deadline dates where the programs will close on the date specified. There will be no more late applications coming into the system unless the departments want them in the system. Which comes up to my next point of including override abilities. Departments will be able to override their own admissions deadlines for specific students. So if a department says, I want to be my deadline to be March 1st, and an applicant comes into the system and says on March 5th, I have an NSERC scholarship worth $50,000 and I want to bring it to your department, but your deadline is passed and I can't apply. They can take that student and they can say, fine, go into the system right now. I've given you an override for this program, for this major, for this concentration, and you have up until this date to submit your application into the system. That student logs into the system. They will be able to see the program that was previously closed, but no one else will be able to see it. Any other applicant that logs in will see it as being not available. It won't even appear to them in the pick list. It'll just be gone. But this one applicant will be able to apply in the system. All this deadline control, though, falls into a higher structure where Enrollment Services will set broad deadlines. Enrollment Services will dictate when the app opens and when it closes for good for international and Canadian students. When departments set their deadlines, they have to be aware that their deadlines have to fall within these bookends, essentially. Next is to configure both the application form and the checklist to meet the needs of the program. So above, on point number one, I said that you can create questions and requirements in the system. This is where we use them. You can use these questions and requirements to build your own app form and to build your own checklist of what you want or what departments want, what units want to be asked of applicants in the system. On my previous slide, when I said we made a very simplified application, it's true. We've taken it down to its bare bones, basically a profile, curriculum selection, and any questions that are going to be asked at a very high university level. How complicated the application is past that point is completely up to the individual departments, who will be able to ask any of the questions that have been approved as part of their application form. It'll appear on the application form, the applicants will be able to respond to it, and when they submit their application, all that data will be sent into the system and will be saved as part of the student's application form. In regards to the checklist, this is another thing. After the app has been submitted, as now, but in a different system, we'll be generating a checklist of requirements that students have to fulfill. CVs, personal statements, transcripts, test scores, all the usual stuff. In this case, departments will be able to build in their own requirements. If you want a CV for all students applying to a master's program, you can do that. If you want a research proposal for all PhD students, you can do that. And mix and match based on what programs you have and what setup you need to do. Last on this page is the ability to change security access for those within your department. With UApply 2.0, we're introducing a distributed security model that will be distributed to departments to control their own security up to a certain point. So this will be to define who members of the admissions committees are, to define who potential supervisors are. However the departments run, they'll be able to define security around their own admissions process. Is there any questions from anyone? Yes, please use the microphone.
Hi, Mark.
Hello.
I'm Kim Bartlett. I'm Director of Admissions. This is an old question, so I'm hoping that it's now resolved. There was a question once about people working in hospitals and whether they would have access to this facility, yes or no. And I think it's because they have a slightly odd staffing profile. So has that been resolved? Because I know that would be important for many science departments.
Just turn your... There you go. Yes, actually. For those people who do not have appointments to McGill University, and do not have McGill credentials, so anything that's at mcgill.ca, we have the ability to define people who are external reviewers within the system. External reviewers are anyone who does not have McGill credentials. So anyone who has an at MUHC credential can be used. Anyone who might be external to the university that needs to do a review, like for education, someone in a school board. For music, someone outside in a symphony, perhaps, who wants to review a file or needs to review a file. That kind of thing, yes. So there is working functionality for external reviewers in this system. There was external reviewer functionality in the old system, but this one does work better, and the security model has been completely redesigned for the new system to really meet the needs of the UApply 2.0. Okay, so I'm going to go back into the system. There we go. Back to the page that I promised I would come back to. So if I was an applicant, I would pick that I was a degree, certificate, or diploma student. As soon as I picked that, you saw that it said processing, and a new box showed up. As soon as they pick that button is when all of those requirements the departments have the ability to set up will take effect. The minute they pick that, or the second they pick that, I should say. Because everything from that point on is based on the setup of the term that has happened previously by both enrollment services and the departments themselves. So what will show up here for the applicant are only the terms that are available to them based on their profile for applying to. If they're an international student and there's a term that is no longer accepting applications for international students, it will not show up. So I'm going to pick summer 2014. There we go. And then next box shows up, department. Same concept. If a department says they're no longer accepting applications for international students, it won't show up. If a department says they're closed entirely, it won't show up. And there's other settings in the background that will generate this list. In our development environment right now, it looks like we've only got the Faculty of Arts and some of education that's currently open, and parts of engineering. So I'm going to pick, who should I pick? I will pick linguistics. So then the program shows up. Down at this level is really where the department stuff really comes into play. They can define what programs they want open and closed in this list every term. They will be able to define it. That's something that's very different, that departments will be able to set themselves when they set up which programs they want to offer in what terms. If there's a professor that's in charge of a particular program and he's on sabbatical for the next 2 years, you can turn it off so that that program is out of play until he comes back. So I'm going to pick the linguistics thesis program. And then area of study, which is the major. And then as soon as you pick the area of study, you can see it's presented me with an application deadline. That's what happens when you pick a major in this system, is that it will be presenting all applicants with the application deadline, when they have to submit and pay for their application within the system, right down to the minute in Eastern time, so Montreal time. So if there's an applicant on the other side of the world, they'll be able to see up to the minute when they have to submit their application. After that, they won't be able to submit anymore, and it'll show up on their side that the deadline has passed. Deadlines, when they are being set up by the department, can also not only be set up at the level of the department, but it can also be set up at the program level, the major level, and the concentration level. So you can have different deadlines at all of these levels for all of your programs, depending on how complicated you want to make your own setup. You could say, as a department, we want all the applications in by March 15th. Or you can say, we want PhD applicants in March 15th, but master's applicants in by March 1st. And it goes all the way down to the level of concentration, so you can even close individual concentrations on certain dates. So once the applicant saves, as you can see, it says the application has been saved, and to modify, please begin a new application. The reason we say that is because everything after this point is based on their selection. And to change their selection would essentially make them start a new application anyway. Because no telling what will appear once they've picked their curriculum. In this case, we're only asking one question of the applicant in this particular case, which is, what is your proficiency in Klingon? And this is a requirement from the university. So apparently the university is really interested in intergalactic language. So they will answer this question and hit save. And then this answer, they will be able to move on to the next section. If there are other requirements from the university, high-level requirements, it would appear in that box as well. If there are department-specific questions that have been set up for this particular program, for the PhD in linguistics, they would show up in another box underneath, and it would be as long or as short as the department wants it to be. There are departments who do not want anything set up at all, just nothing. What they will get on this application form will be any requirements from the university, and that's it. Student will just have to pick a curriculum after filling out their profile, answer any university questions, and then hit continue. The next step is the referees, where they define who their references are. In this case, well, there's only one, but this is another setting that is available to the departments. How many referees they want to ask of their applicants for specific programs, as long as it's above and beyond the minimum requirements for degree programs, which is 2, which is mandated by graduate and postdoctoral studies. If you want 4, you can put 4. If you want 5, 5, up to a maximum of 10. 10 is excessive, but it is there. The ability is there. So this page will adjust itself depending on what the settings are at the departments and what the settings are at the university level. And then once that's done, they would hit continue, move on through the process. Actually, the next step in the process after hitting continue is going back. They would be sent back to their dashboard. Another thing that we've changed, which is the last thing I'm going to really talk about for the applicant side of things, is submitting the applications themselves. So when an application is complete, which in this case none of them are, a checkbox would appear here beside each application that's complete. The applicant can then choose to submit as many applications at one time as their credit card will allow. So in this case, I have only applications for summer 2014, except for the last one, which is the summer 2015. They can submit applications across terms, across programs, across application types. As long as they submit them, if they submit them all at once, they'll be charged a fee based on what they've submitted. The big change, though, is that the way we charge fees in the system. Right now, we advertise that students can get 2 program choices for 1 application fee. However, if they go into the system and apply today for 1 program, and then they come back tomorrow and then try to apply for another program, we are going to hit them twice, 2 application fees. This new system will keep track of how many applications have been submitted over time for a particular term, and it will count. And every second application is when it will charge you the application fee. So on app 1, you get charged. App 2 is free. App 3, you get charged. App 4 is free. So it's every second app that gets charged the application fee. If I decide to submit a whole bunch of apps across terms, well, I'll get charged for every single term and so on and so forth. But that is a big change. Last couple little things on this page. We always, always show the deadline for draft applications so the applicant knows how long they have to complete and submit. And we always show the status. If the deadline is passed, this will change to deadline passed. Invalid means that the program is no longer being offered and they have to start a new application. This can happen when a program is retired in the middle of an application cycle, as happens frequently, unfortunately. So this is something we've taken care of. And all the statuses are explained with these nice, helpful little blue help buttons. So if they hover over, they will get that their application is incomplete. And if they click on it, they'll get a bigger explanation. The application form is still complete. Please add remaining items, and so on and so forth. Okay. So, is there any questions about the applicant side of things? What they will see, what they will do, what they will expect? No? 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 Okay. Good. Back to the presentation. So, more goodies for the departments. A brand new file evaluation interface. What this means is that you apply 1.0, so what everyone is using right now to evaluate files for admissions for graduate studies, will be retired. So everything that's being used right now will cease following the winter 2014 admission cycle. So there's one more cycle to complete using uApply 1.0. And then all the new apps will be appearing in uApply 2.0. So 1.0 will no longer be used for new applicants, which will have a totally new dashboard, which I'll show you in a sec. The new dashboard will have a lot more functionality, a lot more flexibility, a lot more abilities to sort, filter, all that kind of fun stuff. Reviewer comments can now be saved directly in the system as part of the application. So one of the things that was lacking in 1.0 is that we didn't have a way to record anything from the admissions process. If a review was made by an academic, they could not go into the system and type in the review to make it part of the file. That had to be a separate process that took place on the side of uApply 1.0 to completely manage the application process. Oh.
How does that work?
You need to use the mic.
Mark, I think some people didn't hear that. Mark, how does that work?
How does
a reviewer get their little comment into the file?
I will be going into back office section in a second.
All right, sorry about
that. I will show that part. It's okay. Next is the communicate directly with applicants, which is the same thing as I just kind of went over. I'll show you that how that works in just a sec. And this is the ability to answer and to communicate with applicants on their side. So if they've sent you a question through uApply, you can answer through uApply. Or if you have a question for them in uApply, you can send it first and expect an answer from them. An integrated and improved CGPA calculator. So with 1.0, the CGPA calculator was a standalone product that stood by itself on the side and had to be used as a separate system, and then had to be combined with the outside process to manage reviews, the uApply 1.0, Minerva, and Banner to complete the process. Now we've improved and integrated it directly into uApply, so it all appears in the same system. Calculations are done and will appear directly in uApply 2.0 to be used during the application process itself. And lastly is the comprehensive admissions policy has been integrated directly into the system. So those of you who are here from the departments know that when a student is admitted or recommended for admission and their GPA falls below certain thresholds, that justifications are required from either the graduate program director or the associate dean of the faculty that you are in. This whole process has been built into the system so that the justifications can be recorded in system, the file can be moved through the system properly, and that all of these justifications and steps get recorded as part of the applicant's file all the way through the application process. Yeah?
So what exactly does the CGPA calculator do? What kind of data can it use?
What kind of data?
I mean, we get lots of applications from Iran, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Does it do conversions, or does it just take McGill GPA numbers and spit out a CGPA for you?
It does do. The purpose of the calculator, since it's even prior to the one that's in use now, which was an Excel spreadsheet, what the GPA calculation and what the GPA calculator are is that it takes the grades from whatever country and it will standardize them to a letter-based system so that everyone is on the same playing field, I guess you could say. So it would take the Iranian grades, someone would data enter the transcript and the credits, and then based on the research that's done by the graduate admissions section, the conversion takes place and will convert the numerical grades in the case of Iran to a letter-based grade for McGill, and give a final GPA calculation for that applicant based on the transcript that's been provided. Okay, any other questions before I go into the system? No? Okay. So I'm going to log off with Mr. Peanut. And I'm going to log in as my account here. Forgive me, I just have to get the password. Okay, so this is the entry point into the system for all staff members at McGill. Everyone who logs into the system will get the exact same dashboard, whether it be the registrar, the associate deans, the academics, enrollment services. Everyone is on a level playing field, and they all get sent to this page first. What you can see on this page will be dictated by your security and your roles within the system. For me, the account that I'm using right now is a super user account. It can see everything and all departments. But when you log in, you'll see whatever department you are a part of based on, and what actions are available to you based on your role within the system. If you are cross-appointed, then you will get access to multiple departments. If you have two or three, you'll see them all in here. If you only have one, you'll only see the one department you have access to. So in this case, I'm seeing all the applicants in the system because the super user status will give me access to everyone. And this is the new dashboard. This replaces the dashboard that is currently being used in release 0 or 1.0. So you can see we have a bunch of headers with a bunch of applications in a list. Every header is sortable and filterable based on the criteria that are in each column. Filtering is something that was woefully missing from the first version of the system. You could not sort any column at all. It was always in the same order all the time. You couldn't go through. You could filter, but you couldn't then sort the list to your needs. So we've added that, all these little red arrows, ups and downs, sort the list based on the filters you have in place. So each column is filterable. So in this first column, we have three different variables. We have first name, last name, and ID, so you can filter on any of these. Same thing for term. You have the season, and then you have the year. Department and program, you can filter by anything here, department, program, major, or concentration. So if you want to see all the applicants applying to a specific concentration, you can go down and search and filter, and you'll get the list of all the applicants applying to that concentration. The REQ column will give an indication on whether or not all the students' mandatory requirements have been fulfilled or uploaded, That'll get a check mark once it's done. The status, you can search on various statuses in the system. We have a lot. There's a lot more than there ever was before. And all of them will eventually give you something, depending on how long the system is in use. I wouldn't recommend going in there on the first day and trying to find things, because a lot of these statuses won't be in play yet. But you can do stuff like you can find all the students you've extended an offer to, all the students who have confirmed, declined, who have been refused, all the students who are currently on the waiting list, all the students who you've recommended to see if they're still recommended for admission, to see what the status of the application is, so on. Cancel. The next section is the calc column. Indicates whether or not all the GPA calculations for a particular applicant have been completed. Reviews. This will record how many reviews have been submitted for any particular application. So on the previous slide where I said academics can now go in and record a review in the system, this will record how many reviews and will increment depending on how many people have gone in to review a file. And the last is the CGPA. So this is the admissions CGPA for this particular applicant, and that is set later on in the process, and I'll show you that in just a second. Scrolling down to the bottom, you'll notice one difference here from UApply 1.0, and that's the paging. In the original system, 1.0, you used to have to page through all of your applicants, page after page after page after page. It got tedious and tiresome. And we got lots of complaints about that. So this now is a expandable dashboard. It's not paging. It'll just keep getting longer and longer until you reach the maximum number of applications allowed on the page, which is 100 at this point. And when you hit display more, it will display more. And there we go. And it'll just keep getting longer until you hit the maximum, which is 100. If you have more than 100, you will probably have to filter a little bit more refined, in a more refined manner, to get the list down a little bit, if you want to get all the applicants on the screen. Also, a few changes from everything we've ever been doing before. The refresh button on the side, over here. That refresh button is now because the applications that come into the system are coming in dynamically. That means that as soon as they apply, the minute, the second that they apply, they will appear on the dashboard. There's no more delay like there is now. Currently, within the old system with the Minerva application form, there is an overnight wait for many applicants, depending on when they apply in the system. If they apply at the minute after the push takes place from the day before, they're essentially waiting 23 hours and 59 minutes for their application to get into the system. In this case, they'll get into the system right away. The departments will be able to view their applications right away, and there is the potential, I've used this example before if anyone has heard this, there is the potential for an applicant, for example, to apply at, say, 5:05 p.m. Montreal time. Their application will get pushed into the system immediately. They say they're in China, in which case it's 5:05 a.m. in China, and they're early risers, and they're really eager to get that application into the system. If they go in, apply at 5:05, they can have access to their documentation checklist right away. They can upload their documents. If their referees are extra efficient, their referees could potentially respond to the reference requests within a couple of hours. And by the time we open at 9 o'clock the next morning and you go into the office, that application might be there and might be complete and ready for review, and all this overnight when in the old system the push process hadn't even probably taken place yet. It's a really big difference, and it can get students into our systems a lot faster. The buttons on the side, I'm just going to touch on the concept really quickly, but not necessarily what the buttons all do. The concept behind this is these buttons on the bottom are bulk action buttons. So you can do certain things en masse. The one I like to talk about is the refuse button. You can refuse lots of students all at once. It's very dangerous, it's very powerful, but it's also very useful. So what you can do is you can filter this list however you want it to be filtered. Let's just say, for example, all the applicants whose GPAs are below 2.5. You can filter, get the list down to exactly what you want it to be, click this button at the top, which selects all, go down to the bottom, hit refuse, and within a couple of steps, it does ask for confirmation twice. Within a couple of steps, it will then refuse all of the students you just picked. Like that. They, before you know what happened, they will be refused. So that's why it's very powerful. Just to use the...
Does this apply to the ones that aren't displaying on the screen as well, I would imagine?
No, it doesn't. It only applies to the ones that are displaying on the screen.
Okay.
Yeah. So, it will select all, and it will refuse those ones that you have selected. It does ask, as I said, ask for confirmation twice. If you've gone through and you've confirmed twice that you want to refuse them, they will be refused, and the applicant will see it immediately. Before you have a chance to say, oh my God, what did I just do? The applicant will already know, potentially, that they've been refused. So it is very powerful. You can also cancel them in the same manner, put them on the waiting list in the same manner. If your department uses the waiting list functionality and you have a really big one, you can click them all off, put them on the waiting list at once, and be done with it. And the other one is in review, which is part of the review process, which will be covered, I'm not going to really cover it today, but it will be covered in the training for evaluation and decision, which is starting on August 7th. So I'm not going to really touch on that today, but that is part of moving the file through the process. So if I click on an applicant, let's try who's a good applicant. I'll find someone with... See, I'm using the filters. I'm looking for all the applicants whose checklists are complete. And all of the applicants whose checklists are complete in submitted status. So there we go. And I will pick... I'll pick Kelly Asimov. Oh, no. Back. Sorry, I will pick someone else. Anne-Marie Minerva. There we go. Something I will mention while this is loading is that for those of you who are department people, and for even those of you who are enrollment services people, or IT people, because I see a lot of you in the audience, the big change in the system between what is being done now and what is being done when UApply 2.0 goes live is that at no point in the admissions process, unless something odd happens, will you need to go into Banner to do any part of this process, or Minerva, for that matter. Currently, we use the graduate recommendation form, which is part of Minerva, to admit students to graduate studies. Following the winter 2014 term, that's going to be retired. SATMs, SACL, aren't going to be used for graduate admissions anymore. And everything to do with the admissions process on the department side of things, and in many cases for enrollment services as well, will take place directly in UApply. It's a one-stop system. It's everything in one place in most cases. There's a few things that will still need to be done in separate systems, like batch scanning and indexing will still need to be done in WebTop and Input Excel. But applicants will upload their documents, track their status, departments will admit students, recommend students, view documents, all within the one system. So there isn't going to be four or five different systems to access in order to admit one student. That being said, this is the application detail page. So this is what all the applicants will look like when you go in as a back office user to view the status of an application or to review an application. So always there will be information about the applicant themselves here at the top of the page. Program information, the term, what application number it was, their student ID number. All the applicants will get ID numbers. That hasn't changed. They will all be assigned a McGill ID number the minute they apply. That has not changed. But their applications will no longer appear in Banner until much later in the process. Viewing submitted applications. This is essentially viewing the app form. It's split up into three different tabs: the profile, the app form itself, and the referees that have been defined. In this case, there are none. But you can see all the bio demo information for an applicant. You can see what they've applied for, any additional questions they may have answered, all within this one pop-up. This is going to replace the old SZRAWAPP report that's distributed to all departments via Minerva on a daily basis. That will be retired following the winter 2014 term. So it will no longer be processed and for graduate studies. So on the left side of the screen is the checklist. So it starts with education history. In this case, it is a McGill student who has a lot of programs. Wow, okay. The difference between this system and 1.0 is that if it was working, which it isn't for this particular applicant, so I'm not even going to press it. If it was working, I could click this McGill transcript link here, and it will pop up live from the student advising transcript. So all McGill applicants will have their student advising transcripts available right in their detail page. There's a really big difference from 1.0, where enrollment services in the records section had to go in and manually index all of the McGill transcripts for all McGill students into the system. I think it was two or three times for the last admissions cycle. In this case, it's going to be live, it'll be there all the time, and it will take you to the most up-to-date version of the student advising transcript at that particular second. It will also retrieve the GPAs from McGill students and put them into the system, and all of their education history from Banner as well is being pulled in. So graduation info, programs, majors, all that fun stuff will all be pulled directly in the system from Banner. Scrolling down. Test requirements. This is why I picked Anne-Marie Minerva, because she has test requirements, and it's kind of cool. So, test requirements. If a student is of the need of a test, like a TOEFL test, GRE test, Proof of English Proficiency, GMATs, whatever, the requirement will appear here at the top. So in this case, there's actually no required tests. Like, they don't need to provide it. Then below, you can see that this particular applicant has taken these tests. So we present at all times all the tests that have been taken and sent to the university that are still valid to whoever is working in the back office. So if I were to click on the TOEFL, the results will pop up in a separate window. So I can see that it's a TOEFL computer-based test, the score. If there was a centile, it would show up, and the date taken is here as well. The same thing for the GRE. Here, it gives us the GRE, it gives us the overall score, and it'll also give us any subscores in this window as well. So for an internet-based TOEFL test where it has four subscores, the four subscores will appear here, whereas the main score will appear here on the screen. Interviews and auditions. We've built in the ability to schedule and set up interviews and auditions directly in UApply. So if I click on this button here, Add, it will give me the did entry fields to set up an interview and an audition in the system. This will then, once saved, send an email to the applicant telling them that this has been set up and notifying them in an email of the date, time, and location of the interview that is to take place. And it can be set up any way. It's very flexible. You can set up a Skype interview by putting in the location as a Skype address or a phone number if it's a phone interview. Or if it's in person, we've actually built in the link to find a building in case you don't know the address of where the building is taking place. And it will open up the McGill maps so that you can find the building that you're looking for in case you've forgotten your own address. Once it's set up, it'll appear here. It'll also appear on the students checklist. And it will, once it's there, and once the interview has taken place, it will also allow it to record notes from the interview into the system, either by typing or copy and paste. And those notes will be visible by anyone who can see the file. Additional documents, this is where any documents that are set up as part of the checklist will show up. So if the departments go in and set up something to say all of our PhD applicants need CVs, research proposals, and a copy of their master's thesis to be uploaded. When the checklist is generated as part of that program, they will appear here immediately and the applicant will see them. If they've forgotten something or if they need something more detailed from the applicant, there's always the ability to add, which will go into the requirements catalog, and you can pick any documents you want to add to the checklist after they've applied, and it will send them an email to tell them that their checklist has changed and to log into the system to provide more requirements. This is one of those new automated communications that we've introduced into the system. So there's a lot of functionality on the checklist itself. Each section has an add button, so if the student forgot a piece of their education history, you can add it in and it'll ask the student to upload a transcript. The same thing for the test requirements. If you want to ask them for a test after the fact, you can add it. Interviews and auditions, additional requirements, and additional questions. We have now the ability to ask questions of applicants on the checklist, not just on the app form. So if there's a question you want to ask of applicants after they've applied, you can put it on here and it'll appear on the checklist and they'll have to answer it as part of their application requirements. The one thing that's not showing up here, because this particular applicant doesn't have any, so I'll go into one that has some references. Divith. Scroll down, there you go. References. Any of the referees that have been defined by the referee, by the applicant will appear here. If they've been received, they will appear as being received and when. And the name, usually longer than one letter, is clickable, which will bring up the reference. The referee's information, who they are, and so on. Any letter that has been uploaded, if they type the recommendation right into the system, because we're going to provide them with a big text box to type right in, will appear here. And we also have built in the ability to ask referees specific questions, the same as we've had with applicants. So departments can define what questions they want to ask of referees as part of the reference process for their programs. If you have a PDF form that you ask referees to fill out as part of the application process, you can build that entire form into the system, and they will answer it when they go and respond to the reference. And all the information is then saved and is part of the applicant's file and is all saved in the UApply database behind the scenes. Back. Okay. So, moving on to the right-hand side. Go back. Try a different one. Okay, moving on to the right-hand side. Starting at the bottom, there is a... There is, at the bottom, the communications module. So the communications module looks the same on both sides. It really doesn't differ at all. It is a simple two-way communicator between the department and the applicant. And that's it. It doesn't go anywhere else. It can't go, you can't forward a message to somebody, you can't CC somebody. It's just a two-way communicator. It's essentially the digital version of toucans with a string in between. That is it. It is very simple. So don't expect too much from it. However, those toucans do record everything and then save it as part of the applicant's file. So in this case, I can enter text. So I'm just going to enter a bunch of junk. Hit send, and this message then gets recorded in the list, which will just keep getting longer and a scroll bar will appear. That will appear on the applicant side of things, and they will be notified that there's a new message waiting for them in the system to be answered. Yep. Oh, did I? Okay, perfect. So the applicant will be notified by email that there's a new communication, And also, when they log into the system on their dashboard, the application where there is a new question will have a new message icon appearing beside it. So it's very simple, but it is also very useful if you want to record your communications with the applicant as part of the student's file. Next was what Kim was talking about and asking about earlier, is the review process within the departments. So as the disclaimer ahead of time, I have to say the review module is very simple. It was built that way on purpose because there are so many ways of reviewing a file in this university that there is not a possible way we could account for all of them and all of the intricacies within them. So what we did was we built a simple module that should meet the needs of the most basic needs of most departments, if not all. What this will do is it will record comments by anyone who has the ability to make those comments, and then it will record a rating if necessary, not mandatory, completely optional. You can use our little star-based system here to rate the applicant. And you can also indicate, but not mandatory at all, completely optional depending on how the department works, whether or not you want to supervise the applicant or whether you want to fund the applicant. That's other options that are available. If I click on those boxes and add comments, he's good. Submit. My rating or my review will appear here at the top. My username was recorded with it. My rating, the date and time I've done it, my comments, and then also it has added the comments of I would like to supervise this applicant and I would like to fund this applicant right into the message. So this will appear and is saved, and as many reviews as get added will all appear in this list to be reviewed by whoever makes the final decision within the department. The rankings are filterable on the dashboard by using the advanced filters. So if there's a department that says we only want to review the applicants who have a rating of 3 or higher, you can sort the dashboard by that and then move the application process through using those ratings. As I said, it is very, very simple. And it was built that way because there's so much variety in the graduate system that it would be impossible to build it all into one system. Moving up to the top is the status box. Here's where you move files through the system. In this case, the status of this application is submitted, which is the very first status in the system. As soon as an application is submitted, it gets the status of submitted, and it will move through the statuses from there. Department staff, graduate program coordinators, administrators, so on and so forth, will use the change status drop-down box to move files through the process. So you can refuse someone, you can cancel them, put them in review, put them on the waiting list, and so on, and gradually move them through. What people see in this change status box will depend on their privileges in the system. If you have the privilege to recommend someone in the system, then you will see that when it's appropriate. If you have the ability to refuse, you'll see that as well. But if you don't, the box, it will not appear in the box at all. Another little feature we built in is the view status history in letters that appears here in this box, if it ever loads. Come on. Let's go.
Can I ask you a question meanwhile?
Oh, sure. Well, yeah, go ahead.
Okay. You mentioned that we would not, in the new U Apply universe, we won't need to look at Minerva or Banner.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine that many departments have been using Minerva reports in some way, shape, or form to do their evaluation.
Yep.
Can you comment just on what the transition plan is? Very, very generally, Mark. I know that it's underway, but I just wanted to raise that.
Not a problem. It has to be very general, unfortunately. I don't have too many details, but it is something that we're looking into. A lot of questions have been asked in previous info sessions about reporting and data availability and Minerva reports and so on. And it is something that we are going to be looking into, but not until after we've gotten the system off the ground.
Just to add, I've been asked, and so has my staff been asked, that if there are particular Minerva reports that you're using, to communicate that, and I'd be happy to take those recommendations. So in other words, they will try to recreate the most frequently used Minerva reports in some way, shape. But as Mark says, this is underway.
Yes.
So just to let you know that they're going to be gone, too.
Yes, that is true. The way that you apply is going to function will definitely be breaking certain things. The applications do not go into Banner right away, which obviously leads to issues with the data warehouse because that's where our information comes from. However, as I said, there is a reporting analysis going on right now, and because we are collecting more data in UApply than we ever have before, especially with the departmental defined questions, we want to make this data available for people to use during their application process and for general reporting. So it's something we're going to be working on, and it will evolve over time, but it is something that we are actively working on and will continue to actively work on until it is finished. So, status history. This particular applicant does not have much of a status history, but you can see it for such that it is. Lucky started his draft application on July 2nd. He paid for it on July 22nd, 2 minutes later, so he went through the app really, really fast. And it was finally pushed into submitted status, which means that the department can see it roughly a couple seconds later. So it went through really quickly. So this is basically we record this history of an applicant. All the statuses that's moved through, who did it, when it was done, so on and so forth. If a staff member did any changes, the user on the side would be the user ID for that staff member, and so on and so forth. If there are any details, which in this case there are none, but if there are any details such as an admissions letter, a refusal letter, a justification that was entered by a GPD or an associate dean, that would appear in that box, and you would be able to see it as part of the applicant's file. So this is something that's a bit different, because before, departments didn't have access to view the letters that were sent out to the applicants. In this case, it'll be right here, available. And the other thing is that there will be a refusal letter in the system from now on, as opposed to the rather harsh and brutal email that we send out now that says, you have been refused, thank you, goodbye. Now they're going to get an email saying a decision has been made, please log into the system, and they'll get a nicely framed letter that says, you've been refused based on something. And it'll be on letterhead, and it'll look pretty, and all that kind of stuff. So it'll all be in system. There'll be no more emails going out just blatantly saying what happened to your file. Close that. So there's one other thing I want to cover on this particular page, and that is the change curriculum button here that you see at the top. This is something that we've not had before, but it will be available to the departments. And that's the ability to change the program the applicant has applied to. But it has certain conditions around it. You can only change the program to a program that is in the department that the student has applied to. So, for example, if they apply to a PhD and they're woefully underqualified, you can change them to a master's on your own without having to contact enrollment services to have them do it for you. If the student applied for a concentration and you do not want to admit him to that concentration, you can remove it yourself. If he's done X number of things, you can come in here and change it and save it, and the applicant will be notified that their program has been changed, and whenever you make a recommendation or try to admit this applicant, then they will go through with the new program associated to them all the way. So, cancel? Okay. Is there any questions about the back office stuff before I go back to the presentation? Yeah, if you could just turn the...
Do you have the capability of checking whether the documents that have been submitted are readable?
are readable.
Yes.
Not without opening them. That's not something that, I don't know if there's a system that's available that can do that, but without opening the document and checking to see that it's legible, that it's the correct document, no. But there is a way to reject the document if they aren't. So if they say this transcript was not legible, or if they uploaded a picture of their cat instead of their transcript, you could reject the document for any of these reasons, and then the applicant would get notified the document was rejected and they'd have to upload a new one. But we can't tell prior to actually opening the document that the document is legible and not a mess, unfortunately.
Okay. Second, someone can fill out an online application. Do you know that person is real?
Real? No. if they're real, in what sense?
Well, when someone sends in a letter of reference, you have something on paper that is traceable.
Mm-hmm.
If someone can just type in a text box, how do you know that that person exists even?
Well, it's true. You don't necessarily know that they exist. It has been for a while, and I think it has been since the advent of the UApply 1.0, that, and even since I was in grad studies a few years ago, that the onus for verifying the authenticity of letters of reference definitely falls upon the departments. If you want to verify using the credentials that have been provided by the applicant, or even independently based on the university the applicant says that this person comes from, that this person does indeed exist, then that is fine. I know there are lots of departments that do this. They take the credentials that were given by the applicant and they try to independently verify that this person actually does exist. In some cases, they don't. And then they can be refused or they can just be outright canceled because of fraudulent cases. But aside from independent verification, there is no way to know that these people are actually real. But at the same time, there's no real way of knowing that a letter of reference on paper is real at this point either. I could go back to my office right now and make letterhead from any major university in North America based on the graphics they have on their website, sign it and send it in, and it would have the same effect. So it's half a dozen of one and six of the other in most cases. But we do recommend independent verification if you have any questionable references that have come into the departments. For sure, for sure. Independent verification is always a good idea, if there's time. Is there anything else? Yes.
About the review box on the right, about the stars and the average,
yep.
Is there a way of sorting the applicants based on
yep.
The average rating?
Yeah, you can filter based on the average rating within the advanced filters section. I don't have any reliable data in this particular instance to show you that, but you can filter based on that information, and then you can act upon. You can do multiple filters on that same data so that you can get a bigger or smaller applicant pool depending on what you're looking for. Yeah. Anything else? No? Okay. Back to the presentation. Okay. So moving away from the features, I think I covered most of them. If I didn't, it's because of the lack of time and the fact that most of the stuff will be covered in the training sessions that will be taking place in the months of September, August, September, and October. So I'll be touching on that in just a second, but if you haven't already signed up, there have been emails that have been sent out for those, so please do so. Streamlined admissions process. We will be giving more authority to departments when admitting certain types of applicants. What this means is that applicants meeting the three criteria below will automatically be admitted without having to be reviewed by Enrollment Services staff. So anyone who meets the minimum 3.0 GPA, who have done all of their studies in Canada at Canadian universities, and are applying to a master's level program, will be admitted immediately following recommendation. Departments will still do their whole review process, pick the students that they want, and then go through the recommendation using the status change box that I showed you before. Upon hitting recommend, The system will take over and will check all of these criteria. If these criteria are answered yes, 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 then before the screen even refreshes, you will see, once it does refresh, that an offer has been extended to these people, to these applicants, immediately, within milliseconds. We've tested it. It really is within milliseconds. And all that saying that the immediacy means the applicant gets an email saying a decision has been made, and if they log into the system, they will see an offer letter, all within milliseconds. If they're really, really fast, they can go in and see everything before you can even come back with a cup of coffee. So this is the new streamlined admissions process. These criteria, technically, based on statistics that we've run for the past few years, cover roughly 51% of the applicant pool. So the majority of the applicant pool falls within these rules. We know there will be no ES involvement. It skips that step entirely. I believe there will be some spot checking done at some point in the application process. But everything will go out, and the students will be admitted, just like that. So that's a really big change from the way things are being done right now. And it will probably have to be thought over within departments to see how you're going to handle this and how you want to admit these students, because really there is no more safety net for a lot of these things. So there will be no more ES to catch any mistakes that may have happened, or there is very limited time to, there is no time to say, oops, I made a mistake. I didn't want to recommend that person. It's not because it's not recommending anymore. It's admitting in most cases. Anything about that?
I just have to say something here. Mm-hmm. This is really welcome news to many departments that have in the past found the rubber stamp or the bureaucracy of an ES approval to be kind of an obstacle. But it's also pretty scary. And it may be a bit daunting for some departments that will have a lot of responsibility. It's like like my life. So just to reassure the second category, that I think that ES, while we will not be an administrative obstacle, we will be there to provide suggestions and support, and there will be verification of processes, so that you won't just kind of wander off into the wilderness to do your admitting. So I don't think we're disappearing yet. So
no, not yet. Okay.
Mark.
Ooh.
Mark, sorry. Oh. Does the master's level include diplomas and certificates?
Oh, yes. That is a good question. Thank you. It does. It includes anyone at the G1 level in Banner. So master's programs, diplomas, and certificates all fall into the same category. So it's not specials, exchanges, visitings, or qualifying, or any of those. It's diplomas, masters, and certificates that fall into this category. Anything else? No? Okay. Moving on. Training. Training courses and materials are being created by ICS. We've had the people from ICS in the system for a while, taking screenshots and creating videos and creating training courses for everyone to take. There are two courses that are planned. GAP 202, which is the setup and administration of the system, which will happen in August and September, which is all of the creation of requirements, setting up terms, setting deadlines, all the administrative stuff in the system. But this is for the fall term only, so it will be the setup of the fall. This will be a lab where we want people to come with all of their work, to sit in the lab with people who know the system, to answer any questions, to do the actual setup of the fall 2014 term in the production system in front of somebody so that they can answer any questions that are necessary, so that we can be sure that the setup is done perfectly for the fall 2014 term. And then the second course is GAP 201, which is the evaluation and decision side of things. So reviewing files admitting students, all that, reviewing documents, all that interesting stuff. That will happen in August, which will be actually starting next week. August 7th is the first scheduled course, is next week. But that is for summer departments only for those first few courses, because we want to be sure we have everyone who is going to be open for the summer term trained before the system goes live. And then in September and October, we'll be covering those who are open for the fall. These will be labs as well, but they're not going to be using real data, and they're not going to be using real people. We've actually set up in our QA environment, we've set up a fake faculty called the Faculty of Magic, where you can admit people to potions, muggle studies, all that kind of charms, all that kind of fun stuff if you know Harry Potter. Training is mandatory for all GPDs and GPCs and other department people who need administrative access to the system. So if you're going to be doing any setup, or if you're a backup for the GPC, if you're going to be reviewing, admitting students, making recommendations, if you're part of the administrative structure of a department, you need to take the training or else the access to the system won't be granted until the training is complete. Training is not mandatory for academic staff in non-administrative positions. So committee members, potential supervisors, internal reviewers, external reviewers, that kind of thing, they do not need training. The system is very straightforward for these people, and we're going to make online guides available and videos available to this group of people because that group is so large. It's a couple of thousand people, and we couldn't possibly train that many people to use the system reliably. So there will are videos. I've actually seen the videos. They're actually really good. They're very informative and will help people guide them way through the system. And the registration is now open on Minerva, and emails have gone out to all departments and a whole bunch of people to say, please go on and register. I've looked at the registration numbers. They are a little low. So if you haven't registered yet, please go on and do so, especially though if you're going to be doing evaluation and decision in the summer term. Please register for GAP 201. Go live! We will be going live for the summer 2014 term on August 7th. This might be news to some of the people in the audience from IT services, because that decision was just made today. So, what will be happening, and an email will be going out in the next couple of days from the executive committee, from Megan Thurston on behalf of the executive committee, that the schedule, the go-live schedule for the system. Essentially, what will be happening is on August 7th, we will be flipping the switch to turn on the system. But we won't be turning it on to the world. We'll only be turning it on to McGill. And that will give departments time to go in and play around with the application form to be sure that the programs that are supposed to be open for their summer term are open, to be sure that the deadlines that have been set up are correct. And that will be for about a week. Once that period is finished, we will flip the bigger switch and we'll open ourselves to the world for the summer 2014 term. And we'll cross our fingers and we'll hope for the best. No, I'm just kidding. With any project like this, with this big, this is a very large development project. Our IT services people in the audience can attest to that. It is a very large development project that we started from the ground up. We literally started from scratch. So if there are any bugs in the system, which I'm sure they will pop up, please bear with us because we do have to have a little bit of shakedown in the system. With all major development projects, there is a shakedown period. Think of any new version of Windows. The first year or so is painful, and hopefully we'll be better than Microsoft. After that, we'll be opening for the fall 2014 cycle, and this will happen at the beginning of October, but the actual exact date is TBA. But it will be within the first 2 weeks of October. We'll be opening for the fall cycle. So this is fall 2014. So this is what will be set up when we do the setup and administration training. Everyone will come in to do the setup for the fall 2014 semester. And it all has to be done before we go live in October. Is there any questions about the go live dates? Yeah.
You talked about issues and bugs appearing. What's the strategy for issue and bug reporting?
That's my next slide. Okay. Community support. So there has been a user, UApply user specialist team created. I'm actually going to be leading the team, and I have with me many people from Enrollment Services who will be supporting me, as well as departmental representatives from certain departments who will help support the community. So what we want to do is we want to support the rollout of UApply 2.0 for both administrative and academic staff. So the ES members and the department members will be supporting and will be available to contact in cases of need for support. More details will come. There's an email that will be coming out in the next couple of days, also from Megan, outlining the support. There's going to be a website put into place to explain who the support people are for the departments and who to contact in what situations. Essentially, ICS will have a role for technical problems, whereas the support team will have more of a role for why is the system doing this? Why is this set up this way? How do I do this in the new system, whereas I used to do this in the old system? More of a business support side of things. And ICS will still be there to support the technical side of things, and we will both work together to liaise with ISR to fix any bugs that may pop up in the system. And next, well, last, actually, is that if there's any questions, anything that you didn't ask before, about the UApply system. A lot of the stuff I did not cover because it will be covered in training, which is much more extensive than this particular orientation. This was meant to be a foundation for that particular training that you'll all, well, maybe not all of you, but most of you will be taking. If there's anything else, anything at all? No? Nothing? Okay. In that case, thank you very much. I hope to see you all at training at some point or another. And good luck, all of you, working in the new system once it goes live next week. And thank you all for coming.